no high school that would do that argument for the kids.
May it please the court, I am from Fort Worth and I represent the defendant, Ms. Cause, Joseph F. Corcoran. This case began as a venue case involving subdivision 14 of Article 1995, which provides that in suits for the recovery of real estate, venues lie in the county where the land lies. However, the primary issue before the court today is whether or not the right to appeal from an order overruling a plea of privilege is discretionary with the Court of Civil Appeals, where such appellate court believes that a waiver of the right to file the plea of privilege is placed. This is the issue addressed in points 1 and 4 of the defendant's application for writ of error. And in my presentation today, I will be primarily addressing myself to these two points. The pertinent facts to this appeal are that a suit was brought by the beneficiaries of a decedent's estate against the decedent's brother, independent executor, and trustee under the decedent's will. The petition itself is lengthy, containing many allegations of a broad and general nature, and praying for numerous and disparate forms of relief, including a prayer for, and I quote, the imposition of a constructive trust on any oil and gas ventures made in the defendant's individual capacity in violation of the fiduciary duty of plaintiffs. Now, it has always been and it continues to be the position of the defendant that he entered into no oil and gas ventures.
The question that the court is particularly interested in, I think, is not the merits of the case, the venue case, but whether you should have had a right to appeal a hearing before the Court of Civil Appeals, or whether the court acted correctly in dismissing your appeal.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that the merits of the case touch upon this question only tangentially and more or less as background. In any event, the plaintiff's petition did not on its face disclose, in our opinion, the identity of these ventures or the location thereof, and consequently a general denial was filed. Indeed, if a plea of privilege had been filed at that time, given the description in the petition and the lack of any other information as to the identity of the land in question, it may have been construed as a form of judicial admission if we filed a plea of privilege to be sued in another county, maintaining under oath that that's where the lot of land lay that the defendant took in violation of his fiduciary duty. After the filing of the general denial, defendants discovered that list pendants notices had been filed in several Texas counties describing real estate interests in those counties as being a part of the subject matter of the lawsuit from which this appeal is taken. Upon learning of the filing of these list pendants notices, the defendant filed a plea of privilege under Subdivision 14 of Article 1995 to be sued in the county wherein lay the land that the plaintiffs were apparently seeking to recover. A hearing was held on the plea of privilege, and the plea was overruled, whereupon, pursuant to Article 2008 and Rule 385, the defendant duly perfected an appeal in the order overruling his plea of privilege. Article 2008 expressly provides that for appeals from plea of privilege rules, which would otherwise be interlocutory and unappealable. However, what took place after the filing of the appeal was that the Court of Civil Appeals, without allowing the defendant an opportunity to brief and argue his points in the manner provided by Rules 414 and 423, which are the rules on briefing and oral argument, the Court of Civil Appeals exercised what it believed to be its discretion by dismissing the appeal and refusing to hear it on the grounds that the right to file the plea of privilege had been waived. Clearly, waiver would have been an issue in the appeal of this cause had it been allowed. However, the defendant was denied the opportunity to argue this point under the procedures normally allowed for appeals, which include the filing of briefs and the hearing of oral argument in the time and manner prescribed by our rules of civil procedure. Instead, the appeal was dismissed, the right to a hearing was refused, and an opportunity to adequately brief the issues was denied. Now, it would be specious to argue that the right to an appeal was in fact granted in this case, simply because the matter was received and docketed by the Court of Civil Appeals. As this court is certainly aware, there is a distinct difference between the overruling of an appeal after consideration of the briefs and oral argument and the summary dismissal of the appeal. Defendant's position before the court today is not at all complicated. It's premised first upon the proposition that Article 2008 means what it says when it says that it gives to a defendant the right to appeal from an order overruling a plea of privilege. And it is premised secondly on the proposition that this right is denied where a duly perfected appeal is summarily dismissed because of an opinion of the Court of Appeal that lacks merit. Both of these premises are supported by numerous cases cited in the brief, Pass v. Gray and Reed v. Garlington being the most. It is our position, and I've always understood it to be the law and still believe it to be the law, that dismissals of appeals should be reserved for those cases in which there has been a failure on jurisdictional grounds to perfect an appeal, or where the appeal itself has been waived or rendered moot. An appeal should not be dismissed for reasons which go to its merits. The question of waiver in this instance goes to the merits of the appeal. If the opinion of the Court of Appeals was sustained, it would be tantamount to investing it and other courts of civil appeals with the discretion to hear or not to hear appeals where the appellate court, before hearing the argument and brief of a would-be appellate, is of the opinion that the appeal lacks merit. Defendant's position is that Article 2008 gives him the right to appeal from an order overruling his plea of privilege, and that he is entitled to a hearing on the issue of waiver in the same manner as if he was appealing any other point. For this court to hold otherwise would do violence to the plain language of our statutes and would dilute the right of protected litigants to appellate review in venue cases. The defendant's position is that even if he had previously waived his right to file his plea, a question that goes to merits in our opinion, it is nevertheless improper to dismiss the appeal without first allowing a hearing on this waiver issue. In this respect, the defendant would find unqualified support in the case of Reed v. Garlington, which is cited in the brief for this very proposition. This case squarely held that dismissal of an appeal from a plea of privilege was improper, even though the plea had been waived, and the court went on to find after hearing on the merits of what merit the waiver had taken place. The issue before the court in this case is not a complicated issue, I don't think, in that it doesn't have, there's not a lot of fact issues to discuss unless we get into the merits of the plea of privilege itself. And with that in mind, my argument, I do not intend to take the full 30 minutes, and unless there's some questions from the court, that would conclude our presentation.
Thank you, counsel. Argument from Ms. Fauna.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert Winter will present argument for Ms. Fauna.
May it please the court, my name is Robert S. Newkirk. I'm a partner in the law firm of McDonald, Sanders, Hinberg, Medical, located in Fort Worth. May we represent the respondents, Ann Carpening Eagle, A.B. Carpening III, Melissa Carpening, and Joseph D. Carpening, plaintiffs in the trial court. Mark, for convenience, I will refer to the petitioner as defendant and the respondents as plaintiff. This is an appeal from an order overruling a plea of privilege, which reached this court as a dismissal of that appeal, the order overruling a plea of privilege. The suit in the trial court is primarily for an accounting of an estate and trust assets by an independent executor and trustee for numerous and various breaches of a fiduciary, also for cancellation and reconveyance of estate property under Section 352 of the Texas Probate Code, Article 7425B12 of the Texas Trust Act, for the appointment of a receiver, and also for the imposition of constructive trusts in connection with the taking of business opportunities of the estate by the defendant, and for such other relief. I would like to review briefly the facts with you in this case. The plaintiffs are the widow and the children of A.B. Carpening, Jr.
Counselor,
yes, sir.
I don't think we're particularly concerned with the merits of the case.
Yes,
I think our problem is whether the Court of Civil Appeals acted correctly in dismissing the appeal rather than even affirming the judgment of the trial court.
All right, Your Honor. The facts then are this court granted the application for the error on points 1 and 4 of the petition. And I assume that the discussion will be related to that. However, if you care to discuss 2, 3, and 6, I'll be glad to do so. Evidently, this court granted application for writ of error under Section 2, conflict in the decision. The conflict pointed out by, alleged conflict pointed out by the defendant in this case, is Reed versus Garland. He cites a couple other cases, Gulf versus Needham and the City of Orange case. It is our position, Your Honor, and we would respectfully submit to this honorable court that there is no conflict that gives this court jurisdiction in this case. The defendant stated in his brief that Reed versus Darlington was on all fours with this case before this honorable court. I would submit that it is neither on the facts, on the issue, on the holding, and on the decision. The decision is limited to whether it's for or against the plaintiff or for or against the defendant. It is on that point only. First, on there's no conflict on the issue involved in this case. The issue involved in the Reed case, in the Gulf versus Needham, in the City of Orange, is simply this. Does an appeal lie from an order striking or dismissing the plea of privilege, or is such order interlocutory and non-appealable? The issue here before this honorable court is whether or not it is proper to dismiss on motion an appeal from an order overruling a plea of privilege when such plea of privilege has been waived by the failure to follow due order of pleading found in Rules 84 and 85 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure. The decision of the Fort Worth Civil Appeals Court in this case was that it was proper to dismiss such appeal when compliance with such rules, 84 and 85, is ignored and such is apparent on the face of the record. It did not hold that the order appealed from was interlocutory and non-appealable. It did not dismiss the appeal on the ground it lacked jurisdiction. Instead, the appeal was docketed in the Court of Civil Appeals. The court reviewed the record and the written argument and brief of the party, and then dismissed the appeal of the defendant because he failed to comply with Rules 84 and 85. Therefore, I submit there is no conflict in these decisions.
Do you consider Rule 423 as giving the court the right without some previous order to say we will not hear oral argument in this case or any other case?
Yes, sir. I think that a court civil appeal, I think it would be a good policy. I think it would be in line with one of the rules of civil procedure.
Federal courts do this, but they have a rule saying that we will decide whether we hear argument or not. I read 423 to say that you're entitled to oral argument unless you waive. Am I wrong?
Your Honor, I submit to the court in adopting Rule 387, which I know is effective in January the 1st, 81, says if an appeal or writ of error has been perfected, we don't deny this appeal has been perfected, but it's subject to dismissal for want of jurisdiction or for failure of appellant to comply with the requirements of these rules. or any order of the court, the appellee may file a motion for dismissal or for affirmance in judgment for cause on the appeal bond of death.
I'm sorry, what rule is the reading, sir?
Rule 387, sir. I admit this is not in govern our case, but I think it's a policy of the court that when a party to a litigation completely ignores the rules of this court, found in Rule 84 and 85 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure, the case law has long been the uniform decision of the courts of this state that plea is waived. Waiver to me, Your Honor, means that the voluntary relinquishment of a known right or claim of a party. This defendant, by filing his general denial prior to filing any plea of privilege, ignored, some did know that the Rule 84 of this court, Rule of Civil Procedure, said I can file this plea of privilege anytime I want to. The danger of this is that you're 3 days into a trial, before a jury, a plaintiff walks in, a defendant walks in, files a paper called a plea of privilege. The court must rule on that. The trial court has the right to strike that plea of privilege. I think that's well established in the law. The decision of this court, suspension of appeals case, which the Supreme Court adopted the holding in the Hope versus clearly said that the right of a plea of privilege is waived. It is gone. It no longer exists. What we have before this Honorable Supreme Court today is a question of the right to appeal from a non-existent right. That right was lost when this defendant filed his original answer in the form of a general denial on March 27, 1979. And then when he came back on June 11, 1980, with a plea of privilege, he halted our right to a hearing on accounting until that plea of privilege was heard. The trial court conducted a full-blown hearing on that plea of privilege, overruled the plea of privilege, this defendant appealed it.
Now the cases say, you're correct, the cases say about due order of pleading. I'm hurriedly, I can't find a rule. Is there a rule that says that you...
Rule 84 and 85, Your Honor, state the due order, the practice of special appearance and the plea of privilege are accepted from Rule 84, which means that the due order of pleading still exists insofar as the plea of privilege is concerned and special appearance. The case law is very clear on the point that if due order of pleading is not filed, then that is waived as a matter of law. In Hope versus Farmer, 56 SW 2nd 633, a Commission of Appeal case whose holdings were adopted by Chief Justice Gerrington for the Supreme Court clearly and explicitly said to the, in 1933, the Bar of State of Texas and the lower court that a plea of privilege must be filed in due order of pleading or the right of privilege is gone and does not exist. This rule of premise is well and firmly established in our Texas jurisprudence.
Now, in that case, were there oral arguments on that point?
Sir?
Were there oral arguments in that case?
This was a Commission of Appeals case, Your Honor.
Well, was it dismissed without oral arguments, what I'm asking?
I think so. I don't know whether it was agreed.
The point's very narrow. I might agree with you on the merits. But do you have a right to cut off the oral argument if the statute says you should have the right to appeal?
Your Honor, I think my answer to that, Your Honor, is simply this. When due order is failed to be filed in a plea of privilege in a trial court, the trial court can summarily dismiss that order. It doesn't have to have oral argument. It can summarily dismiss that order on a motion to strike. The trial court having that right, the Court of Civil Appeal should have that right when it is presented and it's apparent on the face of the record that due order of pleading has not been filed. Now, in this particular case, the defendant makes much of his right not to have a right to argue and appeal the case. I would submit to this honorable court this. When our motion was filed on the grounds that this plea of appeal should be dismissed because there was no right to appeal from, that it was apparent on the face of the record, in Rule 84 and 85, which I hold in the same regard as I hold Rule Statute 2008, the due order of pleading says to a plaintiff, look, you can rely upon plea of privilege being waived if this defendant doesn't file it in due order. you can start preparing your case and try to get the trial on the merits. And I think that if a trial court could do this, and then why should not a court of civil appeals on a motion to dismiss raising this issue for a written brief? Now, if you will look at, which is in the record, the post-submission brief of this defendant went on for 10 pages on the question of waiver. You look at the opinion of the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals, it discussed clearly the question of waiver, discussed it at great length. He got more consideration in that case if you look at the opinion from the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals and the Eastern Court of Civil Appeals gave Mr. Reed in Reed versus Garland. And it is simply, there are provisions in our law, and there are situations where that a court of civil appeals can dismiss an appeal where there is a failure to comply with the rules, where there are procedural irregularities and other defaults which do not involve appellate jurisdiction. For example, failure to tender proper deposit to cost through 388A, failure to file briefs through 415, failure to comply with order increasing cost bond, subparagraph A of Rule 354, lack of standing to appeal because of consent to judgment, and another situation of satisfaction of compliance with the judgment. I say this is analogous to the situation where a defendant completely ignores Rule 84 and 85 and says, I'll file my plea of privilege whenever I get ready, and then loses that right, as this honorable court has said in all the quick cases following it. And I think that he is merely consented to the judgment, consented his loss of this right. Now, I'm only saying in a situation where it's apparent on the face of the record a due order pleading is not followed. Now, if a trial court has the right to strike a plea of privilege not timely filed when there is no specific provision in the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure for such action, then surely the Court of Civil Appeals should have the same right and duty to dismiss such appeal when the same such facts are apparent on the face of the record.
Would the trial court have a right to not hear argument on whether to strike or not?
I think so. It can argue, it can ask that written brief be submitted.
Counsel said, I'd like to be heard. Trial court said, don't hear you.
I think the trial court would probably hear me, Your Honor. And I think in this particular case here, that had the defendant in this case requested the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals for argument on its motion, on our motion to dismiss, there's a good chance the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals would done it. Now, I know the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals considered a 10-page argument on a post-submission brief by this defendant on the question of waiver. It's in the record that the opinion of the court, Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals, discusses at some length this question of waiver. Now, I'd like to make one other point, Your Honor, at this stage. A motion to an order dismissing appeal has been held by this court to be tantamount or the effect of affirming the lower court's judgment. The appellant's position in this appeal, if you read his application for writ of error, is that this is an appeal from an order dismissing defendant's appeal rather than appeal from an order overruling his plea of privilege. I submit no conflict exists with Reed versus Garland. The Supreme Court of this state and International Association of Machinists versus Federation Association of Accessory Workers, 133 Texas 624, 130 SW 2nd 282, tell that the dismissal of an appeal leaves undisturbed the judgment of the lower court and thereby in effect affirms the lower court's judgment. The court, by dismissing this appeal, not on the grounds it didn't have jurisdiction, but on the grounds this defendant did not have the right in the first place to file this plea of privilege, he gave it up. He voluntarily ignored Rule 84 and 85. And therefore, I submit there's no jurisdiction, no conflict in this case. Now, what the defendant has done in his brief in connection with trying to establish a conflict with Reed versus Garlington, he's piecemealed it in one instance and then taking the broad aspect of the case in the other. In my in this court, there are two issues involved in Reed versus Garland. The first issue is the question of the jurisdiction of that court, whether or not the Court of Civil Appeals in Reed versus Garland had the right to appeal from an order striking a plea of guilty or dismissing, not one overruling. The court held on that issue that was the same as an order overruling a plea of guilty, and he had the right to appeal, and that's all that court said on that issue. And that was the only issue before the court. The issue we posed before the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals was simply this. Where it's apparent on the face of the record that a defendant has totally ignored Rule 84 and 85 in due order of plea, on a motion to dismiss the appeal before that court, can that court do it? The court felt that in these days and times when not only the trial courts, the appellate courts are burdened with litigation, that there should be a rule that would allow it, a court to look at the record and does it. I think the fallacy in the defendant's position is that a court of civil appeals judge does not give consideration to its motion. I think that the opinion in this case of the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals shows that to be wrong. And I think your honors know that the Fort Worth Court of Civil, that any court of civil appeals of this state gives just as much consideration to its motion as it does its hearing on the merits. And I can see no conflict in this case with any of the cases cited by the defendant. And I think in policy, that when you set the bar of the state of Texas and the lower courts, if we mean what we say when due order of pleading should be followed. You're ignoring our rules when you say 84 and 85. We can file it any time we want to. No, that isn't what the court told. The court says you better file a plea of privilege in due order, or your dilatory pleas and your dilatory actions are not going to be sanctioned. And I think the written argument of the defendant sufficed, and the question is, this defendant lost his right to oral argument. That's the only thing.
Counsel, let me ask you this. I'm concerned about the Court of Civil Appeals' power to dismiss except on jurisdictional grounds. Failure to file your bond or the things in lieu of a bond. Let us suppose that we were talking about a plea of statute of limitations in which the trial court sustained a plea on statute of limitations, and on the basis of the pleadings it was barred by the 2-year statute of limitations. The loser, whose case has been dismissed or who had a judgment against him because barred by statute of limitations, he appeals to the Court of Civil Appeals, and the Court of Civil Appeals looks at that and says, yes, it's right. I think this is barred by statute of limitations. Now, what does the Court of Civil Appeals do? Does it write an opinion affirming that judgment, or does it dismiss the appeal because it agrees with the statute of judgment?
Well, the Court of Civil Appeals, the fact is involved there. And I think we'd write an opinion, Your Honor.
We write an opinion in either instance, whether it's a dismissal. That doesn't quite get to it.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, are we dealing with the Court of Civil Appeals jurisdiction, or are we dealing with the right to appeal? If the court doesn't have jurisdiction, well, then that's the end of it. But on a plea of limitations, the Court of Civil Appeals may entirely agree with the trial court's judgment. It may be apparent on the face, but can a Court of Civil Appeals dismiss the appeal because the appellant is obviously wrong, or does it go ahead and dispose of the case on the merits by affirming?
The point I'm making in this case, Your Honor, I think that in the situation, this case was disposed of on its merits. The dismissal of the appeal, if you read the opinion, the issue was raised on waiver where it's apparent on the face of the record. And in Reed versus Garlington itself, the very case this defendant suffered, it says the appellant waived his right to file a plea of privilege as a matter of law. The court could enter no other proper order than what it did.
Yes, it could. It could have affirmed the judgment of the trial court.
The court couldn't, it was talking of the trial court, John, said the trial court could enter no other order than what it did.
Oh.
It was on a motion to strike. And my only point is here is that if Rule 84 and 85 mean what they say, the law, the court's decision mean what they say, the right is lost, it's gone.
And therefore, the court, the trial court should be affirmed.
Yes. And the point I'm making is that by dismissing this appeal, in effect, the Court of Civil Appeals did affirm. By dismissing the appeal, which leaves the trial court's decision undisturbed, and it is in effect affirmance. The Supreme Court has said that, in case I just cited. And I think as a policy matter, the court, the...
That's a written case, you say, but that's no written case.
Sir?
We can tell by this.
No, the Reed, that wasn't a Reed case. This was a Supreme Court case where it's 133 Texas 624, 130 SW 2nd 282, International Association of Machinists, wherein the Supreme Court stated that the dismissal of an appeal, as distinguished from a dismissal of a case, leaves undisturbed the judgment of the lower court and thereby, in effect, affirms the lower court's judgment. And I submit in this case that that's what happened. And there's no conflict between the decisions of Gulf versus Needham, the Reed case, and the City of Orange case. The South Court, which is cited by the defendant, he cites it a little out of context when he says, has the absolute right to appeal. He's talking about two defendants, but one of them has been ruled upon. That case went up on certified questions. And if you read earlier in the South Court decision, it clearly states what it's talking about when it talks about this right of a plea of privilege. On page 86 of the Southwestern Recorder, the South Court case, the Commission of Appeals, whose opinion was adopted by this honorable court, stated, he has the absolute right, speaking of the plea of privilege, to claim it. How? By filing his plea in accordance with the statute. So what we have here is a defendant. I might mention in passing, it's been 2 years since, over 2 years since this defendant filed his original answer in this case. But what we have here is, on the one hand, a defendant saying, look, I've got the right to appeal because 2008 says so, it's a black letter of the statute. We're saying over here, look, the black letter of the statute, you ignored completely and you lost the right. You don't have that right. You waived it. It's gone. Now, the Court of Civil Appeals in Fort Worth gave the due consideration. And if you look at the Reed versus Garland decision and you look at the decision in this case by the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals, you'll find that the defendant got a lot more consideration if you're just looking at the face of the opinion than they did in Reed versus Garland. And all Reed versus Garland did said, look, an appeal from an order striking a plea of privilege is not an interlocutory non-appealable. Therefore, we've got jurisdiction. In the next paragraph, after it recited the fact, it said, however, this is waived as a matter of law. We're going to affirm. And it just seems to me that at some point where a plaintiff has a right to know when he can go ahead and pursue his lawsuit and get it to trial on the merits. I think Rule 1, the rules of civil procedure, it breathed life into it to say when a court in this fact situation has something apparent on the face of the record, a defendant waits 15 months before he brings up a plea of privilege. And I'd like to correct one of some discrepancies here in the argument to this court so far as this discovering Liz Pendens. Liz Pendens was filed in this lawsuit early in the game, shortly after we filed our lawsuit, and certainly before the summer of 1979. Also in the record are nine orders that were entered in the trial court between the date we filed our petition and before the summer of 79. Now, this is a year before he filed his plea of privilege. Nine orders, of which this council approved. And one of those orders was approving an inventory and appraisal that showed exactly where all the real estate was we were concerned about, the oil and gas property. Also, in the record are interrogatories that were leveled at this defendant in the summer of 1979, wherein he told exactly where all the real estate was located. This defendant had been in possession of this estate for 5 years, from 1974 through 1979. And when we brought suit for an accounting, we wanted an accounting. And this, our rights to accounting were halted by this plea of privilege. And here, 2 years later, we're before the Supreme Court of Texas arguing a question of venue.
You're suggesting the appeal was frivolous and simply for the purpose of delay.
Yes, Your Honor. In the Court of Civil Appeals, There was no mention made in that post-submission brief. In his motion for rehearing, no mention made of Reed versus Garlinger in any conflict. The defendant filed a request to the Court of Civil Appeal, which is in the record, for certified questions to this court. No mention made of Reed versus Garlinger in any conflict with this decision with other courts of the state. That was turned down. Then he filed a writ of mandamus in this Supreme Court, which was denied. He filed an application for writ of error, which was granted. And I respectfully submit to this honorable court that first, we don't think a conflict exists. We think, if anything, what the judge in the Fort Worth Court of Civil Appeals decision was doing was making new law. Now, new law, if the court doesn't agree with it, that's another matter. But I don't think there's a conflict. Clearly not a conflict in this court to get right to give this court jurisdiction. I think he's trying to make new law. I think he's saying, look, well, we've got this situation, which has been time and time again. We are going to clear our dockets. He says this is not going to be treated as an ordinary appeal. Now, this honorable court may not agree with him, but I think he's got good reason, because a defendant has ignored the Texas rule, the civil procedure, and the statute. And it just makes good sense to say, look, let the plaintiff get the trial in the lawsuit. There's some stage and some time when he's not going to have to be worried about a clear prison. Thank you, Your Honor. Any other questions?
You might care to appear before the legislature on that question. We're debating it this week.
Sir?
So you might care to appear before the legislature on that problem. We're debating it this week.
Well, they are.
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, it's been a pleasure to here for this court. It's been 30 years since I've been up here, I think.
Gotcha. Closing argument and petition.
Your Honor, with respect to Reed versus Garlington, I think that despite the argument of respondent that this case is clearly in point, as is stated in the opinion of the Court of Civil Appeals in this case, or perhaps it's in respondent's brief, this situation they analogized to one where the court could have stricken the plea. Well, in Reed versus Garlington, I think you have both. It was contended that on appeal from a motion overruling a plea of privilege, or a motion which could be construed also as a motion striking the plea of privilege, the court said it didn't make any difference which way it was. The grounds were waiver, but that under 2008, they did have the right to appeal. The same statement is stated made categorically in Pass versus Ray, and has been made time and time again. One of the reasons perhaps that Reed versus Garlington was not set forth in the post-submission brief to the Court of Civil Appeals in response to the motion to dismiss was the time constraint. It is set forth in that brief that we haven't had time to respond to this issue, and it was filed shortly after, before the appeal had become effective, and was ruled upon shortly thereafter. And it's just, this is the reason why we have our rules with respect to briefing and oral argument in appellate cases. So despite the length of the post-submission brief, it was put together rather hastily under the circumstances, and that may be the reason Darlington was not contained therein. The respondent would have you believe that the dismissal of the cause is the same as overruling the cause, and in effect, I am. It may be that if left alone, that the dismissal of the cause will have the same effect on the lower court's judgment. I'm not saying that. I really don't think that's relevant. What is relevant is that the procedures are entirely different. In one case, we have rules of civil procedure as to briefing and argument, and in the other, we don't.
Counsel, let me ask you this. The argument might be made that, now you filed your plea of privilege, how How many months after?
It was a considerable length of time, perhaps over a year.
And obviously out of time.
It was far after the filing of the general denial.
Well, the rule says when you've got to file your plea of privilege. But now, the argument might be made that when you're going to proceed by plea of privilege, that the filing of the plea of privilege is one of the appellate steps, just like your appeal box. And you miss the first one, you're out. You miss the second one, you're out. What's your comment?
Well, my comment is that unlike the filing of an appeal bond, it's not quite that clear in this context. It's much like a statute of limitations situation. There may be extenuating circumstances. Here our argument would have been, had we been allowed to make it, that the petition did not disclose that the case was primarily for a constructive trust in real estate. It certainly didn't identify the land. Should not be incumbent upon us, whether it's in response to interrogatories or otherwise, to come forward and make that determination. When these list pendants were filed, and we received no notice of the filing, but when we discovered that they had been filed, it became apparent that that's what this case was all about. Law on due order of pleading not being completely, not being at a standstill, perhaps. At that time, when it came to our knowledge as filing the list pending, that we better file a plea of privilege at that point, if ever. Now, I would think that the next step in this case would be to urge our special section to get a ruling on it and get this matter in the petition clear, because we're merely trying to protect our rights at this point. And if the petition were amended, and it has not been, to set forth that if